You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 26 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Kill It. London, England hard rock five-piece Kill It will be hitting the road this October to promote their current single and video alongside metal legends Diamond Head. With comparisons ranging from Guns N' Roses to Alter Bridge, the band have had a busy 2018 with appearances at the Isle of Wight Festival, Stone Free Festival, plus Hard Rock Hell and a sold-out show at London's Underground. For more information on the band, check out Facebook/KillItBand, Instagram @KillItBand, Twitter @KillItBand, YouTube.com/C/KillIt, and KillItBand.com. Now here it is, their new single, Waiting for the Day.
You've got Jack O'Shea from Bayside, and you're listening to That One Time on Tour.
Run for the road, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the bank tomorrow, we'll do it, we'll do it all again.
Hello and welcome to episode number 26 of That One Time on Tour. As always, I'm your host, Chris Swinney, back with another stellar conversation with someone in or around the music industry. Last week on the show, we had Mr. Nathan Gray from Boy Sets Fire. It was a wonderful episode. Thank you so much for checking it out. We had a lot of people from Germany check out the show last week, so big ups to you guys out in Germany. This week on the show, I got to sit down with Nathan's tour mate coming up in November, Jack O'Shea from the band Bayside. So before we get into my conversation with Jack, I do need to tell you guys about some sponsors of the show. As always, we have Muncie Music Center, the place that I work here in Muncie, Indiana. Go to MuncieMusic.com, check them out, show them some love. If not, if you're local, you know, go to 600 South Mulberry Street and tell them that Chris from That One Time on Tour sent you. Maybe they'll hook you up with something. I don't know. I also have to tell you about Rockabilia.com. They're still on as a sponsor. Rockabilia.com is your one-stop shop for everything band merch related. They have over 500,000 unique items officially licensed by the bands. When you go to Rockabilia.com, at checkout, put in the promo code PCTOTOT and you're going to save 15% on your entire order. I also have to tell you about Sticker Wolf. They are back. They're an amazing company. They just did a logo for the podcast. I'm sure you've seen it. It's got the little microphone. It looks really, really cool. So check out StickerWolf.com. You can also hit them up on Instagram at StickerWolf, Facebook/StickerWolf. They're everywhere. Check them out. They're a wonderful company, and they will hook you up with some amazing graphic design and some amazing stickers. So remember, StickerWolf.com. Okay, make sure that you are following us on all of the social media platforms. It's at TOTOT Podcast. If you want to get in touch, become a sponsor, or just chat with me, it's TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com. Make sure that you call the TOTOT hotline. That is 1-765-372-8818. So that's it. I'm going to get into my conversation. Oh, I forgot about one more thing. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts, go leave us a review. I don't even care if you subscribe. It would be amazing if you would subscribe. But if you leave us a review, it really helps grow the show. So rate and review us in the iTunes store, on Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Okay, that's it. We're going to jump right into it because I am tired. It is like 3 a.m. and I am ready to go to sleep. So we're going to get right into it right now. Here it is, my conversation with Jack O'Shea from Bayside. And I am on the telephone with Jack from Bayside. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing really well.
I really appreciate you coming on the show today, man. Thanks for your time.
Not a problem. I really appreciate you having me. So there's a mutual appreciation already. We're off to a great start.
Great start, man. So we were texting earlier, and I figured out where I met you.
Okay.
We met at Bamboozle in the Hoodwink Festival back in 2009 out in New Jersey.
Oh, man.
Because you guys did a NoFX set, and we did a Misfits set.
Oh, heck yeah.
I just remember you guys pulled off those NoFX songs really, really well. It was really cool.
Oh, man. And that is, and probably will be, the only time I have ever played a full half-hour set with no shirt on.
Yeah, right.
Much to the displeasure of many, I would imagine.
That's awesome.
I was like, look at that fat hobbit. All right.
Yeah, I was trying to think. We were texting earlier, and I was like, man, I know that we've met. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I was looking through some notes I had, and you guys played that same festival, and that's where we met. Because Anthony gave me a hoodie that night. I remember that.
Oh, nice. We're going to need some money back for that.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to, I owe you guys the checks in the mail, man.
Retroactively from 2009.
So what I like to do when I start these things off is I want to know what got you into music and what kind of led you on your path as far as pursuing it as a career. So what was like the first time you really thought, man, I really think I can do this?
I guess I was pretty young. I was in fourth or fifth grade, and there was a new kid who came to my school, this kid Kevin, who's actually still my friend today. And he was advanced, I guess, in what he was like listening to and stuff. For at the time, we were 8 years old, and at that time, he was listening to a lot of like Led Zeppelin and AC/DC, and like we were just, I kind of got into that with him, and then he was friends with some older kids at the high school who kind of got him into like hardcore and punk really, really well early, in the sense that we were like 8, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah.
But he had played a guitar, and I thought that was about the best thing I'd ever seen. And he got a new one, and he sold me his old one for $25, and that was it for me. We were just hanging out all the time, playing music, kind of like getting together in each other's basements and writing terrible songs and trying to learn how to play stuff. And at the time, the only thing I loved a lot, I was starting to get from, you know, into like the AC/DC and Led Zeppelin again, with a lot of like leading and soloing. And then as we kind of got deeper and deeper, we were getting into more like thrash metal, where I was really listening to, I was just in love with speedy guitars. Yeah. I was listening to like early Metallica, early Megadeth, stuff like Testament, the bands like that were, and then like even like just any, if it was fast and technical, I was like, I love this, I want to do this, and I couldn't, of course. So we just ended up doing like Sex Pistols covers and kind of like some Misfit covers. Actually, we did a cover of, and in my eighth grade parochial school dance, we covered She. Wow. Did a couple of other. So there was, you know, I really gravitated, you know, when you can't play. When I can't play the stuff that I really liked, I was like, what can I play? And that was all, it was clearly that. But even from that moment, it was just kind of forming like basement bands and getting groups of kids together to write music. And it just started writing punk rock songs. We had like, me and another friend, Kevin, had this kind of project called Socco and Vanzetti. There was the two of us with like a crappy drum machine, and all the songs were just kind of like sort of goofy, but like angsty. There's songs like Jim Sokolov Sucks, and like it was all very, you know, preteen and fun. And yeah, I mean, kind of from there, like I just kind of kept getting to points where the stuff that I would listen to and like, I was getting to play more and more of it. And I was able to, all of a sudden, I was able to play some of the rhythm parts of Metallica, and some of the rhythm, I was able to play the songs of Megadeth, just not like the, I just wasn't playing any of the super technical. I wasn't playing any of the solos at that point. Like, yeah. It's not like I'm 9 and I'm like, all right, Marty Freeman, here we go. Like, I guess I got you dialed in already. But it was kind of, it just ended up being good. Like, kind of as it was a progression, it was soon I was able to play all the Sex Pistols catalog, and I was able to move on to the next one. But I'm kind of from there, I was like, I'm going to do this forever in some capacity. And then
did you take any formal lessons? Because I just know from what I know of you and listening to your solos and whatnot, I mean, are you musically theory inclined? I mean, like, do you know a lot about theory?
I mean, the theory that I know is like from just general understanding. I mean, I've read a little bit about it in, you know, much later years.
Yeah.
And I kind of understand where I'm coming. It's like stuff that feels intuitive to me, but I've never really been able to articulate.
Okay.
It's not like I have some, I took a series of about 6 lessons when I first got my guitar, and that was like my parents' way of being like, all right, if you're going to get a little amp, I had like a little like 1/8 combo, and it was like, if you're going to get a little amp and you're going to spend money on guitar and you're going to get some lessons, we're going to learn to play this thing. You're not just going to sit here with your friends. And so I took about 5 or 6 lessons with this guy in Massachusetts who was like a super jazz player, and he was really cool. And he gave me the lesson that I wanted. And he was like, you don't really give a shit about music. You just want to play guitar.
Yeah.
And I mean, it didn't come across the way that I just said it there. It makes it sound like it was condescending and like wrong, but he was like, you don't want to learn the circle of fifths, man. You just, what do you want to learn how to play? And I just remember being in there with like a Fugazi record, or like, here's a Halloween song I really like. Yeah, and wow. He was like, yeah, man, let's figure it out. So he kind of taught me ear training. And then I basically, anything that I've picked up in theory has just been like basically just transitive property, just rubbing off from stuff that I've listened to and stuff that I've liked. And I guess as the music that I listened to became more technical and became more sort of coming from a music school background, my style kind of developed and evolved to sort of encompass that. But I when I do lessons now, I try to give the lessons that I was given, but sometimes people are like, so I noticed you kind of are switching modes in here, and I noticed you went from like a Ionian to a Mixolydian here. Is that I'm like, hey man, if you say so, I don't know. That just sounded good to me, and it was reminiscent of a couple different things that I really liked.
It's funny, so, I was gonna ask you that because I teach guitar for a living now that I'm not touring anymore, and I'm kind of a theory geek, and I've listened to a lot of your stuff, and you tend to use Phrygian quite a bit, and I was gonna ask you about that, but I guess I'm not gonna ask you now.
Hey, man, if you say so.
That's awesome, man. So you said you were playing with your buddies. You guys had some like garage bands and whatnot. Bayside formed in 2000. You didn't join until 2003. What was your relationship with those guys? How did that all come about?
Well, I was at home and I was kind of playing. I had graduated college in Boston and was just working in bars and I was working and doing marketing for a software company for a little while. And then I was just kind of scouring local want ads, looking for a band just that I could be in. And I found a five piece kind of crap. Not, I don't want to say anything. It wasn't a crappy hardcore band. It was a five piece hardcore band, but nobody was really that advanced in the band. But the drummer was like really interested in prog rock, like really was a super like Yes fan, really loved bands like Gentle Giant, and like was friends with a group of other friends that were in a band called Sunset as a Battle. That's like, was kind of more of a true prog band. So this five-piece hardcore band, basically, we kind of whittled it down over the course of a year. Just people were kind of frustrated with the stuff that I was bringing to the table because I was listening to a lot more proggy and I was listening to a lot more advanced. I was, you know, at that time I was listening to a ton of like fusion jazz and Frank Zappa, and also was like big for like post-hardcore stuff like Quicksand. So I was trying to write more aggressive, progressive things. And the other guys in the band were kind of, they just kind of didn't have the chops or didn't want the chops to be more technical than just like kind of a hardcore band. So it ended up just becoming a three-piece band with me singing and playing guitar, the drummer who was into prog, and the bass player who was like, I want to be in this band. I'm going to figure it out. So I was in that band, and that was a band called Finger Bomb. It was not the name we picked. It was the name that I inherited.
Finger Bomb.
But awesome. Just did shows around Boston and New England, kind of heavier shows, and then we ended up being on a lot of prog showcases. The drummer of Sunset as a Battle, who is the band that was like friends with our drummer, and the guitar player of Sunset as a Battle, also toured with that band Junction 18. So they had just gotten back from a tour with Bayside, and Jim Mitchell, who's the drummer in Sunset as a Battle, was commenting that, hey, I just did this tour with Junction 18, and Bayside is a band from New York. They sound like nothing I've heard. They're kind of like going hard, trying to get a label deal, and I'm going to go play drums for them. They could use a guitar player. Do you want to go? So, sure.
Yeah.
So I just kind of quit my job, sold my stuff, moved out of my apartment, and went to New York. And I met Anthony and Andrew at the time on the first day of practice. And I was like, well, I hope this works, because I kind of set myself up in a weird way for this.
Wow, that's great, man. So that first, like, you know, that first meeting and then the consequence of, like, the times after that, how was it? Did you enjoy the guys? Did you enjoy the music you were playing? Or were you just excited that they were actually doing something and moving forward?
A little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. What I really liked about Bayside, and the early stuff sounds very different from like as we got going, obviously. But like, you know, Anthony was 19 or 18 when I came down there. I think he was like 19 when I joined, and at the time I was like 26. I was about to turn 27, so I was like, at that point I had been listening to a lot more technical stuff. So I came in, and I feel like I was playing. You know, Anthony's obviously a great guitar player, but like, when I joined the band like 15 years ago, it was like he was a 19-year-old kid who was like kind of playing. He was in that group of like, I just want to play punk rock. I just want to play this. It doesn't have to be crazy. And then I was coming from the angle. I was like, fuck, man, I want to open it up a little bit. So kind of coming in, all the stuff that he sent me to learn was just like, okay, this is fine. This is very straightforward. I can do this. There were a lot of parts, and the songwriting didn't make a ton of sense yet, but I was like, I can do this. So I came in and I nailed everything. And then as we got into writing and record, because we went in to record Sirens pretty much right away. And a lot of that was material that existed before I showed up. But a handful of songs we kind of wrote specifically for that. So at that point, I just kind of started to stretch my legs. And it was like there was definitely a little bit of a natural resistance, in the sense that I don't think that there was kind of that like, dude, you're playing too much. You're playing too much.
Yeah.
You're playing too much. And I feel like, you know, that's something. That's kind of a battle that we still have a little bit to some degree now, because I am like a total overplayer. And if I think, and this, we'll get into like my solo stuff.
Yeah. 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 I've got that on my list.
Like, and I have no supervision. It's going to be too much. There's going to be like, wow, there's like 20 layers and there's no space for anything anymore. You've completely ruined it.
Dude, I completely understand what you're saying, because every band I've ever been in, I'm kind of a shredder, and like, you know, I've been in punk bands, been in all kinds of different bands, and I always tend to overplay. So I always have to kind of, you know, regulate myself on what I'm doing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, in that respect, I think Anthony and I work incredibly well together, because I feel like he is very much the editor, and you know, that my thing is busy, but we definitely appreciate each other. But at that point, I can take some criticism from him as far as, this is too much, man. You gotta fucking calm down.
So Sirens and Condolences came out in 2004. That's after you guys signed to Victory. How did you guys get hooked up with Victory? What was that all about?
Well, I think Anthony had been sort of in contact with them prior to me joining. They had done a tour with Junction 18 before I got there, and I think Victory came out and saw them. And then their drummer was talking about leaving, and I think Victory's notes were like, you could really use another guitar to kind of fill this out a little bit. And so on one of the first tours that I'd done with Bayside, we had a Chicago show at Fireside, and it ended up being a Victory showcase pretty much. So wow. They came out, and then they were like, yep, we're good, let's do this. So
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that was super soon. So it was like I went on one tour, and then we found out like pretty much the next tour that we'd done. And at that time, it was like you get off one tour, you're home for 3 days, and you're back on the next tour.
So your relationship with them, and like, you know, I've got a lot of friends that were on Victory. There's a lot of horror stories. I don't go into this on all the podcasts, but how was your experience working with Victory? I know you guys were there for like 6 years or so.
Yeah, I believe that we're the first band to successfully complete our contract. There are a lot of people with a lot of very valid complaints about Victory, and I'm certainly not going to like jump up and defend the label. But I will say, for what happened with our band, I do think that part of the reason that we're still together as a band is because of the self-sufficiency that we were taught as a result of being on a label that was not overly handouty. Kind of that mentality of like, hey, no, we can't really rely on anybody. We're going to have to figure this out ourselves. We're going to have to figure out how to make money out here. We're going to have to figure out how to build our fan base. We're going to have to do this without thinking about like, is somebody going to hand anything to us? So I think, again, it was definitely a little bit of tough love, but I mean, I do think part of the reason that we thrive even now, and that we've been able to get through a lot of tough times is because we were taught that, like, you know, you're the only people you guys can rely on.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a good way to look at it. I know a lot of people that have horror stories from that label, but you guys kind of took that and turned it into a positive. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do? Really, I mean, we could all sit here and bitch about it, but like at the end of the day, we're sitting here bitching and not out there trying to make our band bigger or make our band better. So
you guys, when you fulfilled your contract, I mean, there were other albums, of course, in there too, that, you know, we could talk all day about, but, did you sign to Wind Up right after that contract was out?
We did. We finished Victory in super strange fashion by releasing two records on the same day. And then, pretty much started in talks with, we were looking for a label that at the time we had realized that, you know, Victory certainly never afforded us opportunities like to go beyond like what we were touring in, which was like very much like a scene thing. And you know, I know we've always been, I think a lot of times recently where I'm hearing from people be like, oh man, I never listened to you guys because I assumed you sounded like this because of this and because of these affiliations. And I, you know, in retrospect, I wish that I checked it out sooner. So I feel like we were kind of battling that perception, and then, oh man, I totally just brain farted.
It's okay.
Holy crap. Wow, that is bad. See, is it possible to have a senior moment, or is this just a result of waking up?
Well, let's talk about that. How we were talking earlier, we can kind of go back and forth. So you have a kid, I have two kids. How old are you? I think you might be about my age.
I am 42 right now.
Oh, I'll be 40 in October. So yeah, you and I are very close together, and I have senior moments all the time.
Oh my God. I feel like against my will, and ultimately what I believe to be the will of nature, I am now a morning person, which is I've never thought in a million years that I would have the ability to wake up like between 5 and 6 o'clock consistently with no alarm clock and be awake when my eyes open. It's not like opening my eyes and being like, oh, thank God. And then I just go back to sleep and it's noon.
Does that affect you when you go on the road? Because, I mean, the schedule is completely flip-flopped when you go on the road.
Nah, right? It's like jet lag. I just like, at that point, I handle it straight up like jet lag. I just have to acclimate to a different schedule at that point. So it's like a couple of days where I'm a little bit sleepy around showtime, and then kind of force yourself to stay up late and sleep in a little bit. And then the next thing you know, I'm back onto my normal degenerate tour schedule of going to bed at like 4 a.m. and waking up at like 1 p.m.
So you said that you just recently moved. Where are you at in the country right now?
I'm outside of Nashville. Okay. I've been living in East Nashville for the last 5.5 years. And, we love it. It's hipper than it is safe and good for our daughter in a weird way. Like, and that sounds snooty or whatever, but there are a couple counties outside of Nashville that are known for just being super safe and great schools. So we kind of, we're doing, doing, we made the move, and it's going to be great when my daughter is old enough to visit our old neighborhood. That's probably super hip in 5, 10. I mean, it's hip now, but it would be going there in like 10 years. I'd be like, Dad, how come we moved here? And I will take great pleasure in being like, because of you, like you did this. Yeah. When it was just me and your mom, we were going to the bars and we were hanging out and we were doing all the fun stuff. We were up 5 nights a week and then you came along.
Isn't that weird though? Like my wife and I just moved to a new area too. I'm in Muncie, Indiana, which is north of Indianapolis. And it's like when you have kids, you have to look at different things. Like, what are the schools like? What, I mean, like, I never thought about any of that stuff. And my kids are still fairly young. I mean, they're toddlers, but you don't know how long you're going to be somewhere. So you have to make sure you're going to move to a place that might accommodate the future. I just think that's very strange.
Yeah. I mean, that's 100% what happened. We figured that if we were going to move now, I'd rather her make some friends in the area so that by the time she hits school in a few years, she already has some, she's going to go into school knowing a couple of people. It won't be like, hey, you pulled me out of a preschool situation. Cause she currently is still going to preschool in East Nashville, which is, you know, not far. It's like 14 miles from here, but it's far enough where, you know, she's not going to clearly go to school out there, but yeah, at least that way, when she's out here, she's going to make some friends. So when she hits school, it's not going to be like, I don't know anyone. I hate this. Just trying to basically lubricate transitions. That's what all of this is.
I feel like Nashville is almost like a new Portland or Seattle. It seems like a lot of kind of punk and hardcore musicians are all moving to Nashville. Do you kind of feel me on that?
Yeah. It's, you know what? I have a really good friend, this guy, Ethan Luck. He played with Reliant K. He's an amazing musician and he's been like my best friend here. And I met him a while back when I was doing the To Write Love on Her Arms tour with Anthony. And he was like, man, you got to get out of living in New York City. I don't know how you do it. You should move to Nashville. And we were like, I don't know. But, you know, Anthony's ex-wife and the mother of his daughter lives, her family is down here. So they had already started a conversation about moving down here. I had kind of, my wife and I had kind of joked around about it. And then her job, she works for ASCAP, who does, she does a concert licensing.
Cool.
They have a headquarters here and they have, you know, they have offices in New York and they at the time kind of just totally kind of randomly had offered her the opportunity to transfer down here. So I was like, hey, you want to go live somewhere that doesn't cost as much as New York City? We'll probably make more money and,
yeah,
it'll be like it'll be a better place where we can actually have more space and maybe have a kid. So it just seemed like a no brainer. But yeah, it's weird. I've been in here for about 6 years and the entire, I guess the landscape of Nashville, as far as just like the visual, like physical landscape, the demographic landscape, everything has changed pretty dramatically. It is very much kind of centered around music. Was it a few weeks ago? I went in like 1 week. I saw Toto and I saw Napalm Death, Slayer, Testament. So it's like there's just such a broad variety. Now, you know, I've also, there's a lot of like prog stuff that comes through here. I've seen like Mahavishnu Orchestra. So there's definitely not just like, hey, it's Dierks Bentley playing at the Nissan Stadium tonight. There's definitely a lot. There's a lot more going on here. Yeah, it's great. You know, and Anthony and I live here. I know that Chad from Newfound and Ryan Key did live down here. My friend Ethan and I have a bunch of other friends, like my friend Alex, who's in Mayday Parade, and Rob, who is in We Are the In Crowd, live down here. Just kind of a big collection of, actually, most of the Reliant K guys are down here, too. So Brandon Swanson, who's like a tattoo artist, who was in one of the original I'm the Avalanche guys, and he just moved down here. I saw Matt Ridenour from Hawthorne Heights. He's moving here now. So it's like, it's kind of awesome. It feels like going out in East Nashville almost feels like it can start to feel like a Warped Tour barbecue a little bit.
That's awesome. My wife and I have tried to decide, you know, if we leave Indiana again, because I moved back to Indiana because of, you know, the finances. It's cheaper to live here. So,
heck yeah.
So like we've discussed Nashville quite a bit. So it makes me feel good that there's a lot of musicians sort of like me down there. Maybe I'll have a little community if I ever end up down there.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it would be shocking to you how many people you know that you don't know are here already. I feel like if you've done touring at all,
that's awesome.
And just, it's, you know, it's nice. It's, there's a good sense of community. It's definitely less expensive than New York. It is, however, getting expensive pretty quick. The real estate's going a little bit crazy, which is, I guess, good if you own some, but, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to move down and actually buy a spot.
Okay, so I want to get back to the music because I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but I do enjoy talking about Nashville because I'm thinking about moving down there. But
we'll talk off the record later.
Cool, man. So Vacancy was your most recent full length, correct?
Yep.
And that came out on Hopeless Records. What is the is Hopeless treating you guys okay?
Yeah, Hopeless is my favorite thing to say about Hopeless, and I love this because I feel like it's somewhat of an anomaly. Hopeless does everything that they say they're going to.
Wow.
We have stood by. They're honest. They stand by what they say, and I love that. And I think that, like, we're also, again, being self-sufficient. We're not asking for a ton. It's like, hey, let's make this record. We're not trying to fleece you. Let's make this record. Let's get it out. Spend a reasonable amount on this and this. We're going to run pre-sale. Give us some ads, and then let's just get out there and do this. And you know, when we recoup, let us have what we're owed.
That's great, man. I mean, I've dealt with them a couple of times. They always seem like really, really good people over there.
They are. It's a, you know what? It's nice to be in that office too. Everyone who's works there, it seems to be a genuine fan of all the bands. They care about what they're doing. They're hungry. It's just, it's a really nice group of folks. We're really lucky to have like good folks to work with.
So you guys have your second acoustic record that's coming out soon, correct?
Yep. We were taking some time off from touring just because I feel like we've been going a lot for the last couple of years. So we wanted to take the better part of a year off of and start thinking about our next full length. And we had all this downtime, and then we started talking about, like, we should do another acoustic record because we don't really need to. We could maybe write like one song, but for the most part, we could just kind of reimagine some of the existing material. And we had done a short run of these type of shows, a full band acoustic stuff last holiday season, and it went real well. So we were like, sure, with that set list that we were playing there, we could add a few more, we can kind of work some of our stuff out, and we'll just see if Hopeless wants to do this. And we approached them with the idea, and they were like, yeah, well, you know, we'll do it. But nobody really, these typically don't do that well, but you know, it's not really going to cost us much. Like, we're doing it at a buddy's studio here, just a couple of flights to get Nick and Chris down. And then we did it, and everyone was like, we heard the record, and we were like, this came out better than we thought it was going to. And then the label was really excited about it. So far, it's being really well received. Everyone seems pretty pumped. So, I wouldn't say a happy accident, because it was certainly something we didn't deliberately, but I don't think we just kind of thought this was going to be more of a, I just throw it out there, the kind of something that we're going to do for our fans who would. But it seems like this is the first record that Bayside has made where my dad is like, oh, I like this record. My dad is like,
awesome.
I think he's happy for me, and he's like, yeah, I know this is your job, I get it. But like, if I play him most of the Bayside, he's like, yeah, it sounds like music to me, I guess. And then this one is the one where he's like, I need this. He's like, I want to listen to this. So I feel like, I don't know what that means, that it appeals to like a 70-year-old Irish guy, but he likes it. That's cool.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about your solo stuff? I know you're getting ready to go on tour again in November with Nathan Gray, who was just on the show last week, actually.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited. You know what? I don't know that I've met Nathan before. We chatted a little bit, but I'm really excited for that. I got approached. Well, I guess the whole solo project came about with my friend Ethan, who's down here. We were hanging out drinking one night, and he was like, we should go on tour. He has a number of solo records that are kind of a little bit, I would say, a little bit Social D sounding.
Okay.
We should do a tour. And I was like, yeah. And then the next morning, I'm like, I'm not going to go on tour. I don't have a record. I don't have any like material. It's like, what am I going to just go out there and be like, I'm on tour with nothing? And be like, so I kind of was like, I don't have a record. I'm not doing this. He's like, well, let's just figure something out. He's like, write a bunch of songs and come over and record them. So I kind of spent some time, spent like a couple weeks, came up with four or five songs, tracked it there. I wrote one song and had it recorded while Bayside was writing out in California, and then came back with a bunch of mixed tracks. I have another friend down here who mastered them for me. And then it was one of those things where I was like, should I? I kind of talked to our manager. I was like, look, I don't want, this is a first effort. It doesn't really make a ton of cohesive sense. It's not like stylistically one thing. This is kind of a bunch of different stuff. I'm not really sure what this solo thing is supposed to be. Do I need to give them the opportunity to put this out, or is this something I can just do? Cause I'm not looking to like, this isn't like, I don't need a big push. I'm still kind of experimenting. And she was like, give them a heads up. And if they stop, if they put the brakes on, you have to respect it. But if you don't, you know, if they don't care, then just do it. He's like, I don't think they're going to care. So I'm just yeah, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. So I sent him something. I didn't hear back for like a week. And I was like, well, fuck it. Here it is. So,
That's awesome,
I just kind of put it out. And it's doing what I wanted to do. It's given me an opportunity where I can go out and I can play shows. And it's not, I don't want to cheapen it by saying that it's not cohesive. And it's not really like, it's all the songs are thought out. And I really like the songs. But as far as like picking a direction as a solo artist, I feel like, at least while Bayside is incredible, is still very active. The solo project for me is music for music's sake. So it's all songs that it's stuff that I'm doing, that I'm working on, that I like. And I'm leaning on the fact that it doesn't have to be anything. And that's, again, one of the reasons I kind of wanted to keep a label out. When they hear five songs where a couple of them sound the same, this one kind of sounds like this one, but I was like, I don't want to have something that's supposed to be fun all of a sudden turn into another job until I figure out what it's supposed to be. And then if I'm like, okay, this, I mean, I don't know, because some of the stuff that I'm working on now is more just straight up fusion, like instrumental, basically like 4-minute guitar solo stuff. And it's like, well, I don't know where that would fit on this record, but I kind of don't want it to have to be something until I know what it's supposed to be. And then, you know, if I find a direction where I'm like, this is clearly what I should be doing, that at that point, then I will call the label more intensely and just be like, okay, this is what I'm doing. This is a real thing. But again, not that it's not a real thing, but all these songs were sort of born out of fun, and I like that they're fun. They're fun to play. There's something I could do with a band. It's something I can do by myself. And people seem to be enjoying it so far, so that's good.
Have you noticed a lot of, like, you know, Bayside fans coming out? And then, I mean, are they into it, or are they kind of confused by it?
I think that Bayside fans are going to be fans of anything that any of us do collectively, just because our affiliation with Bayside, which is awesome to have sort of a built-in audience. I don't think that it's, you know, I would say that it appeals to a specific side of Bayside fans, but the people who are fans of my playing are certainly very receptive to it. And I think the people who are more casual fans of Bayside might be a little bit more confused by it, but honestly, it is a little bit confusing. It's, for me, it's like a way for people to kind of see different elements of where my influences lie without it being kind of more focused than as it is in Bayside.
That's great, man. So I know you don't have a lot of time, just like you and me. We both have kids. It's crazy. So,
I can't believe you have two. You have a two-year and 11 months?
I have a 2.5-year-old and 11 months tomorrow. She turns 11 months tomorrow.
Oh, man, you are in the weeds.
I am in the weeds, and I'm also teaching guitar full-time, 60 students a week, and I'm doing two or three interviews a week for the podcast. So I am done, man.
You are a champion.
Yeah,
I am. Like,
I like to stay like busy, man.
Having moved and all the stuff that I'm doing right now, I feel like I was like, I'm drowning, but nope, I'm not. That's
cool.
Your job. You're drowning.
So this is called That One Time on Tour. So I want to ask you, and I mean, this could be a hard question. I mean, some people have answers right away. You've done a lot of touring over the last 15 years. What are some of your like favorite memories, or maybe a crazy story that you know, can tell me, like anything about touring?
This is one of my favorite stories, and it comes to mind right away.
Okay.
We had gone to Omaha on a day off when we were on tour with The Sleeping, and The Sleeping's relationship with the inside the band. I'm not talking shit. They'll tell you the story too. They were very tumultuous towards the end. Like their guitar, everyone was kind of quitting and rejoining the band. Everyone was like kind of just getting on each other's nerves. They've been going for so long. We had a day off in Omaha, and we were looking for something to do, and this farm was like, I guess we're just going to drink. Let's just go drinking. So we were drinking, and we're looking for go-karts, because why wouldn't you go drunk and ride go-karts?
Yeah.
And we found this convenience store. There was a girl working in there, and we're like, let's just ask her. She might know what's going on. We're like, hey, we're in town. What's going on? She's like, well, I'm going swimming with my friends later if you guys want to come. And we're like, that's very nice of you, but there's like a ton of us, and like, not like we're weird, but you don't know us. And like, I appreciate the offer, but that's, you know, what it is. She's like, no, it'll be great. Where are you guys staying? And we're like, okay. So we told her the hotel, and she rolled up with a guy who was actually missing an eye, but didn't have an eye patch, just straight up just holding his head. And then the first thing he said was like, hey, what's up? Yep. I'm missing an eye. They call me One Eye. We're like, all right, this is interesting. And I was like, what are we doing? And they're like, well, she was like, this guy works at a water park. We're going to go. So we're like, all right, fine. So this is also at night. So it's like 10 o'clock at night. We're like, oh, late night water park. No, it's closed. So the guy like hops the fence, goes in, flips a bunch of lights on, like comes back with a key somewhere, opens it up, and then jumps over the bar and just starts. There's like a bar, like a beer concession thing there. Just starts pouring beers and putting them out on the counter. And we ended up having this like really bizarre like full evening out until like 3 a.m. at a broken into water park, getting drunk and like doing all the stuff you're not supposed to do in water park. It's like, hey, you need to go down to the mat on this slide. Be like, not today. You don't. Like, I'm just going to jump down head first and like take all the skin off my arms. Like, so that was I gave you a very abridged version of a longer story, but that was definitely, I've loved. And it's funny, cause like I think people assume like now is the crazy time where it's like, things must be nuts on tour. I'm like, no, man, it is tame now. Like, I feel like the first couple of years of touring where you're like, you don't know where you're going to stay.
Oh, yeah,
you're not making any money. And like, you kind of find yourself in these positions. I mean, at this point, like, I'm very lucky to be in the position that we're in, but it's like, hey, what are you going to do tonight? I'd be like, I'm going to put on sweatpants. I'm going to watch TV in the bus and then I'm going to go to bed. It's like, okay, well, that doesn't sound like fun. They're like, no, it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I mean, at our age, I mean, when I was 20, I was cool with sleeping on the floor and eating ramen noodles every night. And now that I'm, you know, almost 40, it's nice to have a bunk on a bus and watch DVDs and be in sweatpants.
Yeah. I mean, just being comfortable. It's like, maybe I don't want to be out until like 3 a.m. drinking. Maybe I do just want to go to bed like after the show.
Totally, man. So you can go. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. That's pretty much it.
Well, I was going to ask you, I'm an avid traveler. I talk about this on the podcast all the time. I've been to like roughly 60, 62 countries, something like that. I know you guys have done a lot of things overseas. Do you have any favorite venues or favorite cities or countries that you've been to?
I had the best time on the first couple sound waves that we had done, where you're kind of in Australia doing these like big, it's almost like a warp tour, but like not as many shows, and everyone's staying in nice hotels and they're really well organized. Like those, I will always remember those, because, you know, my first time being in Australia, and they pick you up and they bring you to these hotels that are these really fancy hotels downtown, and the catering is really good. And you have a bunch of free time on those tours, so you actually get to see. It's like, hey guys, you have 2 days off in Sydney. And we're like, oh, this is amazing. Like, I mean, you don't have the money to have 2 days in Sydney, but it's just like being able to walk around and see the place. So those were almost the first couple sound waves are something that really stick out to me, is they're like, oh man, that was amazing. Just being able to go to a place that you kind of never really assumed you would actually ever get to.
Yeah. It's sad that festival is kind of no more.
I know, we had done the last one, and it just, everything didn't feel the same at all. Like, everything about it was like, definitely was different from how it had been in the beginning. It was kind of split up, so you would find yourself on different days with half of the bands. And we had friends on both days, but it was like one of those things where I was like, I can't believe we're not going to see so-and-so the whole time we're here. Like, that's insane, because it's just kind of, we're traveling back and forth. And it just, you know, everything just seemed scaled back and a little bit different. So, I mean, it's still, I will never take for granted the fact that I've actually got, not that I've been allowed to go to Australia as many times as I have, but that's just one of those things. I really wish, I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic, and that someday we'll be able to get to Asia, because we have not done any touring in Asia.
It's a whole different thing over there, man.
I know, I'm dying to. If any Asian promoters are listening right now, just hook us up, man.
We've got listeners in like Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines. So maybe, who knows?
Yeah, I would like to go to all those places.
That's awesome, man. Okay, so I'll tell you what, I don't want to take up a lot more of your time. I do, however, is there anything you'd like to tell us where people can check out your new solo stuff? Do you know exactly where you guys are going to be touring in November? Can you give us some details?
Yeah, I do. Well, as far as my stuff goes, everything can be found online. I'm streaming everything on all the normal spots, like YouTube and Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon and all that good stuff. And the tour I'm going to be doing is going to be running from the 1st through the 10th of November. And we're going to be playing at the Black Forge in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the 1st. This is basically in chronological order. I'm going to read the tour ad.
Okay, go for it, man. Yeah.
Because that's where I am right now. Pittsburgh on the 1st at the Black Forge Coffee Shop. November 2nd, we're going to be at Day in the Life in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We're going to be at the Ivacoda Studios in Washington, D.C. on the 3rd, The Camel in Richmond on November 4th, Monstercade in Winston-Salem, North Carolina on the 6th. Oh, sorry, on the 5th. On the 6th, we're going to be at Brewhouse Gallery in Lake Park, Florida, Will's Pub in Orlando on the 7th, Planet Retro on the 8th in St. Pete. We're going to be doing a house show in Gulf Breeze in Florida on November 9th. And on the 10th, we're going to be back here in Nashville at the 5 Spot. So I am super excited to come out. I'm going to play 45 minutes. I'm going to be trying out some new instrumental stuff that I've been doing with some looping, playing the EP, maybe doing another new song I'm working on, and probably one or two new covers. And yeah, kind of stoked to be hanging out with Nathan too. I'm really excited. I've been listening to a lot of his stuff, so I'm really excited to watch him play and, you know, spend 10 days on the road with a guy you don't know. That's one of the best ways you get to know him. I'm sure we'll know each other real well at the end of 10 days.
Are you guys going to be traveling together, like in a van or something? Or
yeah, we got introduced through a mutual friend. This is a man, Jamie Arthurs, who used to manage Bayside when I first joined. He lives down in the College Park, Maryland area. But I'm not sure what his relationship is with Nathan, but those two seem to be close also. So it's nice. He kind of called me a couple months ago and was like, hey, how do you feel about doing this in November with Nathan Gray? And I was like, yeah, if he's into it, like I would be, I'm super into it. I'm always looking for an excuse to get out there and just play. And it's refreshing. You know how it is, like if you're touring with a band and that becomes like your job. And I in no way want to detract from how fun it is to be in Bayside. Like I actually have the most fun playing, but it's like anything else. Once you've done it a number of times, this is something just completely different. It's just like it's just refreshing to do something kind of a little bit different.
That's cool, man. Well, I'm going to push it as much as I can on all of our socials to get people to come check you guys out. I hope you have a wonderful tour. I really enjoyed speaking with you today and hope to maybe have you back for a part two sometime.
Heck yeah, man. Anytime. I'd be happy to.
Cool. Well, go take care of your daughter and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much for being on the show, man.
You bet, man. Thank you so much.
Yep. Talk to you later.
All right. Later.
And there it was, my conversation with Mr. Jack O'Shea from Bayside. I had a great time speaking with Jack, and my wife and I have actually been talking a little bit more about moving to Nashville. So who knows, man, maybe I'll, you know, go hang out with all those guys down there in Nashville real soon. But next week on the show, I could not be more excited. My guest is the one and only Mr. Eddie Breckenridge from Thrice. I am a huge Thrice fan. Toured with Thrice when I was in the Ataris. We did the Warped Tour with them on the main stage back in 2009. I've seen them so many times. I've got all of their records. They are a great band. I actually found out about Thrice on Napster like back in 1999 before they even signed to Hopeless. So I've been a fan for a long time. But that's next week. So until then, make sure you're following us on all of the social media platforms. TOTOT podcast. Write us a review, subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's about it. I'm going to get out of here now because it's super late and I'm tired and I have to work tomorrow. So I have to go teach the kiddies some guitar. But I'm going to leave you with two songs this time. I'm going to leave you with one of Jack's solo songs called Insomnia, which is really, really cool. And then I'm going to play my favorite Bayside song. It's off of Sirens and Condolences. It is called Masterpiece. So I hope you guys have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for checking out this podcast. Please tell a friend, tell a family member. Help us spread this thing. We've got some great guests coming up. I'm going to be talking in the future with Randy from Pennywise. I'm going to be talking to Pete from Offspring. I'm going to be talking to Shane from Lead Singer Syndrome and Silverstein. Shane's going to come on the show. We've been talking about having him on for a long time. It's finally going to happen. So thank you guys out there in podcast land. I'm Chris. I'm going to leave you guys right now. So here it is, Insomnia and Masterpiece. Thank you guys so much. Talk to you soon.
I'm living in a haze, can't seem to get out of my way, and in a strange display of devolution, I feel like an animal. There goes another day, flushed out and circling the drain.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.